fuck with great skill from him to wing the Mo Salah. Raheem Sterling, what a finish. What pure class from the Englishman.
Premier Talk, the English Premier League podcast for the fans.
I'm your host, Andrew Mello, and alongside with me, as always, is Daniel Barbuto. Daniel, what's going on today?
Andrew, how's it going? I'm having such a great day.
It's going good for me as well. I'm super excited to get into this episode.
Yeah, of course. You got the first episode. It's going to be a good one. And obviously, we're nice and ready and ready to get started.
Tell the listeners a little bit about yourself. Maybe, like, what's your favorite team and just a little bit of, like, where you came from and that sort of deal.
Okay. My name is Daniel Barbuto. I'm a second-year media production student. My favorite Prem team has to be Manchester United, which I can't wait to get bantered by the fans that start listening weekly. And I'm really excited. I can't wait to get this weekly podcast going. Andrew, why don't you tell the viewers a little bit about yourself?
My name is Andrew Mello. I'm a second-year student of sport media. I'm a big soccer fan, big basketball guy as well, but soccer is my main sport. Been a Premier League fan for quite some time. Portuguese background, parents are from Portugal, so I grew up in a Portuguese household where, soccer was, the focal point on weekends and throughout the course of the week. I have a great bond with my dad and my brother. We're all Benfica fans, SL Benfica fans from Portugal. But in the Premier League, I'd say, a team of mine is definitely Chelsea. I have a soft spot for Chelsea. Just a class club all the way around. Since Abramovich has came over, he's brought in the likes of a lot of Benfica players and Portuguese players. So you had Paulo Ferreira, Bolsinga, Deco, Quaresma, guys like that. Even a Portuguese coach in Jose Mourinho. So, I got a soft spot for Chelsea. I really do. And
it sounds like it.
Yeah, it is. And just a lot of Benfica guys have come through there as well, the likes of David Luiz and Ramirez. So, I got a real soft spot for them. And I'd say that Chelsea by far is probably my favorite team.
So, yeah, we got a Chelsea fan, United fan. So, I guess this year, hopefully United finishes on top of Chelsea.
Yeah,
it's going to be a rough season for United.
I don't know. United started poorly. We'll get to that in the four-week breakdown, the four-week recap, rather. But, Chelsea overall, to start, going into the preseason, they made a lot of changes, spent a lot of money this year. So I'm excited to see what Chelsea is going to do. I'm also excited what Man United's going to do. But yeah, we'll get right into it here. We're going to go into the four-week recap. Daniel, hit him with the four-week recap real quick.
Okay, so let's go. 4 weeks. We got a couple of teams that have a very promising start. We got Everton and Aston Villa. They're both 4-0. We got Manchester City, who is basically in the middle table right now. We got Liverpool, who's already lost, and they got absolutely killed by Aston Villa, 7-2, yep. Which was just ridiculous. We got Manchester United as bottom of the table. And then even Chelsea and City, like, they're just, it just hasn't been from the top six clubs that you expect to perform week in and week out in the Prem. It just hasn't been a great start from them.
Daniel, like, you mentioned that Aston Villa fixture against Liverpool. What do you think went wrong for the reigning champions of last year to lose in that fashion, to lose 7-2?
Mm-hmm. Well, they had a couple injuries, obviously, which is definitely going to be a factor. Like, you had Mane out, who for me is one of their best players, and when you're missing your all-star on your team, maybe gets down on themselves when everything's not going their way,
possibly like a lack of confidence is what you're trying to get at.
Yeah of course you're missing, it's like a Barcelona missing their Messi, or Real Madrid missing, or now I guess it's Juventus missing their Ronaldo.
Exactly,
your team's not gonna have as much confidence to go out there and win as much as they usually would. So I think that's why. And then Alisson also being injured. So your goalie, you're letting in 7 goals. How many of those goals Alisson would have saved is questionable. But it's still, I think probably the injuries is probably one of the biggest factors for me.
Yeah, now that game as well, notable player written off due to COVID. He was in quarantine. Thiago Alcantara, the new signing. We'll talk about him a little bit later in the transfer segment. But, he's a guy that could bring a lot to Liverpool. We know Liverpool has a very good midfield, the likes of Naby Keita, a veteran in James Milner and Henderson, two guys that will bring you that experience on the pitch. And then adding a world-class talent, Spain international, Thiago Alcantara, you know, it brings a lot to your team. He's a passing player. He's a playmaker, and he's going to create a lot of goal scoring opportunities with that front three, like you mentioned, with Mane, Firmino and Salah. And, you know, it's exciting times for Liverpool. And we'll also dive into a little bit after, you know, with our predictions of a champion. And they are definitely up there at the top of discussions as, you know, repeating for sure, Daniel.
Mm-hmm.
So recently, City was out to play against Leeds. New signing Ruben Dias was featured in that match as well. It was a 1-1 draw, Daniel. What do you think about that game? And you mentioned previously about City's poor start. What do you think went wrong with them, like Liverpool, in that outing against Leeds?
City did have a lot of good chances. I feel like they just weren't capitalizing very well. Of course, like if you look at a team like City on paper, they're probably one of the best teams in the Prem because they don't have any positions that are faulty. Maybe you can look at the likes of Mendy playing at left back, but I'd say that's probably their weakest link. And that's not even that weak when you consider it to other Premier League teams. So obviously on paper, you look at City and Leeds and you think City would demolish Leeds, but obviously that wasn't the case. Probably just finishing and missing the likes of Aguero and having Gabriel Jesus is obviously a class striker, but I don't think he's as world-class as Aguero is. So just tiny injuries and just little details that they were missing. It's just, it adds up over time.
Yeah, details for sure. You look at the left-back position with Mendy. Mendy was brought in from Monaco several years back. We all know this for roughly £40 million. In my opinion, it was a great signing at first. I thought he was going to be electrifying for them. He was at the start of his time in Manchester. You know, had a great Champions League campaign with Monaco. That's why he was brought over. But just, you see sometimes, like, defensively, he's very inconsistent.
He's unreliable, completely unreliable.
So do you think, like, with Ruben Dias coming into the mix now, he can play a slot in there at the centre-back position? Do you think it's possible that left-footed Nathan Ake could possibly take over Mendy's spot because he has played there before and throughout the course of his career?
Yeah, that would actually be a pretty good idea for City. I know they like Ake as a center back role because that's probably where he excels the most. But if they could transition someone like him into a fullback, it would definitely be better for their team. I've never been a fan though of Fernandinho playing center back.
Yeah, me too. And
for me, like he's just he's a fantastic passer in the midfield. He's so calm. Like for him to be playing center back, that's like a waste of talent for me almost. Because as world-class as he is, like I think center back, like that's just not the role he should be.
Yeah.
We played in like at all.
Okay. So with that being said, we'll transition into our next segment. We want to look at predictions. There's a lot to predict this season. It's still very early on. 4 weeks have gone by though. The likes of Aston Villa and Everton topped the table 4-0 respectively. Very impressive from the both of them. You know, we're going to go into the prediction of a champion. Daniel, like it's early on. I know teams have been struggling. Favorites have been struggling, but who would you say is personally your favorite to win the Premier League this year?
I think I'm going to go with probably Everton to win right now. Obviously, wow. It's a huge prediction. We're looking at Everton. They have a very good midfield of new signings. They got Doucouré, James Rodriguez, and they even got Alan in their midfield. It's a fantastic midfield. They even have the Icelandic center attacking midfield.
Jeffrey Sigurdsson.
Sigurdsson, yes, he's a fantastic attacking mid as well. They have definitely options off the bench. They have Calvert-Lewin right now, who just won Player of the Month for the Premier League. He's been
player
playing
of the month indeed. Yep.
Yeah, he's been playing absolutely fantastic. You got Richarlison up top as well. With like, just their whole team has been playing so well. It's just if they can consistently keep this up. I'm just not sure. Like it's a good prediction for me. What about you? What do you feel? How do you feel about the team so far? And who do you think could go and win the league?
Honestly, I'm torn between a Liverpool repeat or Manchester City, you know, taking the title, because like we mentioned before, Manchester City, they just got amazing depth from the goalkeeping position all the way through to the strikers. You look at their roster, you got Gabriel Jesus, Aguero. Okay, that's your two strikers. And then on the wings, you have Mahrez, Bernardo. Oh, wait, but you also have an amazing MVP player, type player in Raheem Sterling. you know, they let Sané go, but who do they pick up? Ferran Torres from Valencia. So there's depth all the way through. And the midfield, I could go on about the midfield. They got, the reigning PFA player of the year, Kevin De Bruyne. And they bring in Ruben Dias. To me, in my opinion, watching him play at Benfica, world-class center back, or soon to be world-class. And they're managed by Pep Guardiola. Pep Guardiola has proven himself before. He's done very good things at Barcelona. He's also won trophies here before for Manchester City. I would probably say Manchester City over Liverpool. I don't know if Liverpool's going to repeat. And that 7-2, the 7-2 loss, maybe it tells you something about Liverpool. Maybe it shows that, there is some flaws and there is some weaknesses there amongst their center back partnership. Mm-hmm.
Yep, I agree. Okay, so we got the champs through. How do you feel about a dark horse? Do you think that there is going to be a dark horse at all, or it's pretty outright? Like, you see, you got the top six teams. Maybe if you're going to be rotating Everton in and out of that, is that who you think is going to finish, or do you have somebody different?
Yeah. Like, you mentioned Everton. I see Everton as a dark horse for sure, but there's something very intriguing to me about Leeds. Leeds for me would be the dark horse, in my opinion. They're newly promoted. They had a phenomenal year last year in the championship. 83 points under Marcelo Bielsa. Marcelo Bielsa formerly coached Monaco, and he coached in Spain for Bilbao. Tactically, it's a tactically sound coaching staff there. Like, he knows what he's doing. And we see four games in, the offense there, the attack there, Bamford. Patrick Bamford, former Chelsea man, 3 goals in 4 matches. Right now, their record is 2 wins, a draw, and a loss. And they lost first game out to Liverpool, but it was only 4-3, and it was in dramatic fashion right at the end of the game. Like, they were in that game the whole time.
Yeah, they definitely were. They had amazing goals, too. It's not even like they were just lucky bounces or anything. It was just their whole team played fantastic throughout that entire game. Just a hard loss for them.
Yeah, it was a hard loss. I think they deserved to tie that game, in my opinion. After 16 years away from the Premier League, they're back, and they're back in dramatic fashion. They're last year in the championship, they had a goal difference of plus 42, which is pretty impressive. I mean, the championship is no farm league, that's for sure. It's one of the most competitive in the world, very underrated as well, in my opinion. So, with that being said, and then also, the signings that they brought in, they were able to bring in Coach, the center back from Freiburg, also plays holding mid. He's a great talent there at the back. Mm-hmm. And they also wanted to address, the back even more by picking up Diego Llorente, formerly of Real Sociedad. And also, on transfer deadline day, they brought in the Brazilian, the former Sporting man, Rafinha. So they're not afraid to spend money. And the club's board's definitely backing the coach. So I think they're gonna be a very difficult team to play against, and very hard to get results against as well.
Yep, I completely agree. It's gonna be teams. I don't know if teams are gonna be afraid of them like teams are to go to play likes of Manchester City or Liverpool, but they're definitely gonna be a team that's gonna sneak up on you really quickly, and they're gonna be difficult to take 3 points away from.
For sure. We saw Manchester City, and like we just mentioned it before, how they struggled to, draw against them 1-1. Mm-hmm. So they're given these hard teams, tough minutes for sure. And, I see them as being a dark horse. Daniel, like who would you see to being a dark horse? Who do you see being as an underrated team to, maybe take points from you or to finish high this year?
For me, I'm going to go dark horse is going to be Leicester City.
Oh, wow.
I know. Leicester City, they obviously know what it takes to win the Prem, because they did it a few years back, and that team that they had isn't that intact. They still have the likes of Vardy, and they've made a couple of good signings this year. Like, I think Castagne from Atalanta,
yes,
I believe is a fantastic signing for them. He played like a wing back, left mid, left wing. He kind of played all over the left side. Yeah, and that was like a fantastic signing.
Yeah,
he's a fantastic signing for them. They have Schmeichel in net, who is for me absolutely, he's probably one of the most consistent goalies in the Premier League.
Very proven.
Yeah, of course. And like, obviously you're learning from one of the greats. So you would kind of prove yourself just like that. But now he's gone and he's won the Premier League, and that's obviously added to his resume.
I just like to highlight Jamie Vardy. He's 33 years old, if I'm not mistaken. How has he been able to continue on the form? He's been able to consistently year in, year out score goals.
He's on a mission. He's on just an absolute mission, because he was people would say, oh, Vardy, he's 30, he's 33. When they won the league, he was, I believe he was about 30 or 29. People were like, he's washed. That's it. He's finished. He's near the end of his career. Nobody believed in him for his entire career. And then he went and he carried. I'm going to use carried. They obviously had Conte at that time as well. They also had Mahrez.
Yeah.
Mahrez as well. But he scored goals upon goals for Leicester. And he for me, carried that team to their championship. Like, it was just amazing. Like, he wants to prove all of his haters wrong. And I feel like that's what fuels him to perform every single game.
Yeah. He's just, for me, when I think of Jamie Vardy, I think of clinical. You know, when he gets in front of goal, he's so scary because, you know, if he's in on goal alone, more likely than not, he's going to score.
Mm-hmm,
yep. Very interesting from Leicester. And maybe, who knows, like you said, they might have a great season. They might finish maybe a top five, would you say? Mm-hmm. A top four?
I would say they could. Last year, they finished a couple points. It was Chelsea, Manchester United, I believe, picked up the third spot. And then Chelsea was the fourth spot. And then that left Leicester fifth spot. But Leicester only finished fifth because they lost to Manchester United in the last game of the season. They were only about 1 point back from making Champions League. So I say they finished top four this year. I definitely think that they're going to be a good team. So they'd be one to watch out for.
Okay, so we saw this year obviously the promotion of Leeds. Who do you think will get relegated this year? Who do you think is going to be fighting at the bottom of the league to essentially stay afloat?
I think for me, I go three relegation teams. I got Fulham. They're probably going to go back to the EFL Championship. They do have obviously some really class players. They have Mitrovic up top, who is a fantastic striker.
Great number nine.
Yeah, he's very big. He's a big guy. He's very intimidating. He's a pretty decent finisher. So I think he could obviously lead them to probably out of relegation, but I think they still will get relegated. Same as West Brom. I think they'll probably get relegated back to the EFL Championship. They have, honestly, a fantastic player. I'm going to butcher his name. Matheus Pereira. He's, for me, fantastic in the midfield. I could see him doing really well in the Prem. And then my third team it's going to be very close. I think, although Burnley did have a good year last year, I do not think that they're going to have that good of a year.
That's where I agree with you here. Like, Burnley, you know, right now they have 8 goals against and 3-4. They got a goal difference of -5, and they've yet to win a Premier League match this year. And that's with 3 games played. They're down a game. They have one less game played. But I just, something tells me Burnley's going to go down. Something tells me Fulham's going to go down. They've been struggling to get, any results out of any of their games. Yeah. They looked inferior to all their opponents. And I'm stuck between, you know, possibly a West Brom or a Brighton Hove Albion going down. You know, Brighton Hove Albion have some decent players there, but they really haven't addressed that striking position. They really haven't brought in that guy. They have Neil Maupé, the British international, but I don't think he's going to cut it up front for them. So I'm torn between West Brom and Brighton. Something tells me West Brom can scratch by and stay afloat because they play a 5-back, and you know, the coach has implemented that 5-back, and it's been hard to score goals against them. So I think West Brom might stay afloat, and I'm saying maybe that Brighton will go down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I think Brighton is going to have a tough time staying up in the Prem because, like you said, their striker Mbappe, like he's decent. He's kind of a guy who likes to go and cause havoc up top, which, like, you need a striker like that. But at the same time, he doesn't produce. And when your number nine isn't producing, you're not going to win very many games. Like, let's just be like, you look at the top teams in the world, they all have a world-class number nine. And then, like, if they don't have a world-class number nine, they're not going to win the league. You need to have a world-class number nine. You need to have your world-class midfield. Like, you need to have every single aspect of the team, but if you're not scoring goals, you're not winning games. That's what it comes down to for me. So yeah, I think I'm going to go Brighton, West Brom, and Fulham.
That's a great, prediction. We'll see throughout the course of this podcast series here on Premier Talk. You guys stay tuned with us. When it comes the end of the season, we'll see if these teams, if our predictions were right.
Yeah, we're gonna do some prediction checking.
Maybe we'll have a little wager here. So Luz has to dye his hair like bleach blonde. I don't know, but yeah, we'll see. So stay tuned. So far, we've seen 4 weeks go by. I want to highlight a key player here. Dino, I don't know if you have a key player, but my key player for me personally would be Calvert-Lewin. We already mentioned his name before. Mm-hmm. Another guy I want to think of is Ollie Watkins against Liverpool, you know, 3-goal yep. outing. But going back to Calvert-Lewin here, you know, he just called up for the national team, scored in his debut, great for him. But why did he get there? He got there because Everton started in a phenomenal way. Mm-hmm. You know, we've seen him already have 2 hat tricks this season, once against West Ham in a 3-1 cup tie, or in a 4-1 cup tie, pardon me. So you see how he's been impressive. He's been so hard to stop up top, yep, and definitely. He's just been so clinical in front of goal. And we've seen his heading ability. He's got some height on him. So I think he has the makings of, you know, a great Premier League striker. He's pacey. He's got strength. He's definitely got skill. And when you pair him up with someone like Richarlison, who's very skillful, it almost draws away from, oh, Calvert-Lewin's up top with him. Mm-hmm. Yep. So that's something that I would like to stay tuned and keep watching, and definitely something I'm going to keep watching, because right now he's on pace, you know, to possibly having like a 15 to 20 goal season.
Mm-hmm. I think I'm going to follow suit with you. Not Calvert-Lewin exactly, but an Everton player. I think I'm going to look at James Rodriguez.
James Rodriguez
was absolutely phenomenal. He played on Real Madrid, and then Real Madrid, they transferred him to Bayern Munich. He just hasn't gotten the playing time I think he deserves, because I think he's such a class player that I know obviously Madrid's midfield is fantastic, and so is Bayern Munich. So he may not look the best there, but I still think for him to transfer to Everton, it's a phenomenal transfer, not only for him but for the team itself. Him, because he's going to get way more playing time than he has in the last 3 or 4 years of his career, and he's already performing. Like, he has a couple goals and a couple assists already for Everton. He's helping them with their games. He's helping them win games, and that's what it comes down to. So for me, one person I want to watch out for and kind of watch him progress over the entire season is going to have to be James Rodriguez.
Yeah, James was brought in. People weren't sure where he was going to play in the Everton system. You know, Carlo Ancelotti definitely wanted him back. He's someone he knew from his time with Real Madrid, the mm-hmm. Spanish one of the top clubs in Spain. But, you know, Ancelotti, he brings him in and he slots him where? He doesn't slot him down the middle of the park. He puts him on the wing. Mm-hmm. This is something, you know, Everton plays a 4-3-3. You got James on the right, Richarlison on the left, and, you know, Calvert-Lewin down the middle at center forward. But, like, Dan, what is your opinion on that right wing position? Do you think he's fast enough? Do you think, like, he will prove that he's good enough for the right wing position in a pacey and physically demanding Premier League?
When you look at his pace, like, he's not a very fast guy. It's just how smart he is and how well he can do. He can shoot. He shoots fantastic. Obviously, he has an absolute rocket of a left foot, which on the right wing, that helps him because he can cut in onto his stronger foot and take shots or send balls in across the ground, no matter if it's the Calvert-Lewin or Richarlison running in, or even whoever they have playing at CAM that day. Like, it doesn't really matter. For me, his pace obviously is probably gonna kill him in the long run, mm-hmm. because like you said, like, Premier League is about strong, fast fullbacks and wingers. So when you're going up against likes of, let's just say, for instance, you're playing Manchester City and you got Kyle Walker to go up against, who he's is obviously he's a handful for attackers. He's big, strong, and fast as a defender. Like, that's, like, obviously you need smarts, of course, but if you just look at a regular, like, the defender attributes, like, that's perfect for a defender. So I think pace in the long run may hurt him a little bit, but his technical ability and his soccer smarts is just, like, it's outmatched to a lot of players in the Premier League, which I think is why he's definitely going to have a fun season if he continues to go on for more than that for Everton. It would be obviously a fantastic look for Everton.
Yeah, I think that's what Ancelotti really appreciated, his soccer, his football IQ. Mm-hmm. He's just a player with so much awareness on the pitch. You know, he's able to, you know, sometimes create something out of nothing, and he's got a great passing ability. So I think him paired with 2 pacey forwards is actually not that bad, because he's definitely gonna be able to, like, set up a lot of goals for them. Mm-hmm. So I think, like you said, maybe at times there will be challenges for him, you know, pace-wise. But overall, I think in the long run, it'll prove to be a great signing. And so far it has. Mm-hmm. So I'm super excited what Everton's doing. Super happy for, you know, James to be back in the starting lineup, getting his minutes, because at Real Madrid, he was not at all given an opportunity. And it was tough to see him doing that, because following that, you know, that World Cup in Brazil, he was phenomenal and everyone wanted to see him play and he wasn't mm-hmm. given that opportunity. So super happy for him, and just going to keep, you know, our eyes peeled, you know, for the Everton squad right now. They're doing exciting things. Daniel, let's get into our next segment here, VAR review. For the viewers, just to let them know, VAR review is a segment on Premier Talk where we look at questionable occurrences in the Premier League, or like football fails. So last time out, Manchester United, they got absolutely destroyed. Sorry, Daniel, I know it's a tough watch for you. 6-1 against the North London club Tottenham Hotspurs. The Mourinho was out for a vengeance, and in the course of that game, Martial was red carded for his little situation, I would call it, with Lamella. But Daniel, describe to the viewers what happened and let them know why it's our VAR review fail.
So for me, this is the VAR review fail, not only because I'm a Manchester United fan, but it just, their VAR is there to implement referees' mistakes on crucial moments that could change the outcome of the game. And for this, a red card early in the game is definitely a deciding factor. Martial was elbowed by Lamella, which wasn't seen by the referee. And then Martial turned around and obviously reacting to Lamella's elbow, he gave him some would consider it a slap on the face, a little grazing of the face with his hand, and Lamella kind of looked around to see if the ref was watching.
He gave him a 1-2 Mayweather, essentially, is what you're saying.
I wouldn't call it a 1-2 Mayweather. It's a little bit less aggressive than 1-2 Mayweather. He gave him a little graze, and he kind of looked around for a split second and then fell to the ground, and the referee went over and it looked like he had seen what had happened. And he gave Martial a straight red card. So for me, this is a perfect instance where VAR should intervene into this game and tell the ref, hey, there was a kind of like a, I wouldn't say a fight. It was a little like
a little scruffle. A little, yeah.
Between the two players, it was a little bit of pushing and a little bit of shoving. And it looked like it was a lot lighter than Lamella had played it out to be.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, this is why I have to give it. This is the worst moment of the week for me in the Prem.
And would you say, you know, the VAR fail, would you say that it's more on Lamella being the fail or more on Martial for losing his cool and retaliating?
I think it's a little bit of both. Martial, obviously, like you got to know as a player that the ref doesn't always see the first one, but most of the time he's going to see the second one.
So true.
Because so true. Like when you retaliate in most sports, it's you're gonna get way more penalized than you would if you initiate it. So I think there is a lot on Martial, and it's probably weighed more on him just to keep his cool in these circumstances. But Lamella is obviously a good player for Tottenham. He's played with them over like plenty of years for Tottenham. But this is I don't like seeing this from players. Like, he kind of looked around for the ref. He was making sure that he saw it, and then he kind of dove forward with his hand, with clutching his face. So, like, I don't know. I don't like seeing this from professional players. They know that there's cameras all around them, and that even though, like, right in the game, the ref may not see it, but it's going to get criticized by people after, which obviously they probably don't care. But, like, it's just he's helping his team win is basically what he's going to think of it. But people are going to see what happens, and like that might affect other aspects.
And was Lamella cautioned for what he did, or there was no?
No, Lamella wasn't cautioned. They just they gave Martial a straight red for a slap on the face to Lamella, and Lamella was never cautioned. I wonder if he was spoke to by the ref. But the thing is, for me, VAR didn't intervene at all. So would the ref had even have known that Lamella may have incidentally threw an elbow, or that he dove after when he realized the ref was looking, like, I'm not sure. But yeah, for me, it's a fail. Like this has to be the VAR fail.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you. Like, that's why we sold it out for this week. Many more of these to come for sure. Definitely more blunders to happen throughout the course mm-hmm. of the Premier League season. It's only natural. But you know, for me, what frustrates me most about this is that there's something called VAR, and it's in place to make sure that, you know, when referees, like you said before, like when referees make mistakes, that their mistakes are, you know, fixed, they're corrected, right? Mm-hmm. And even with it in place, you see not only in the Premier League, but in other various leagues, that VAR is not being used to its full capabilities. And when it's being used, it's not being used properly. So there's just a fine line there. And, you know, you think referees and officials would know right from wrong, but sometimes they just get it wrong. And even with this VAR, they get it wrong. And it's just, you know, it makes me wonder. And like, I just scratch my head and say, like, how are they doing this? They're paid professionals. And we're home sitting on our sofas, we're watching the game, and we're like, referee, you have VAR. Yeah. Let's get this right here. And still they don't. So that for me is just a, you know, a big concern, and it's all throughout football.
So I completely agree with, it's frustrating as a fan, especially you're cheering for me. It's my team. So I can say I was cheering for my team and I see it happen. And at first it's like, oh, Martial lost his cool. Why would he do that? But then you go and you look at the replay and you're like, he may have hit him over the face, but it was such a light graze. And the way Lamella acted after it, like, you kind of question why VAR wasn't called upon in this circumstance. Like, I don't know. I don't understand VAR sometimes. So it's a very, obviously we're going to be looking at VAR a lot.
Yeah.
During this year, no matter if it's questionable calls, not given penalties that could change an outcome of a game, or even offsides. Like, sometimes for me, offsides, even though they get that wrong, like they have lines that are implemented that show perfectly if it's onside or offside or not. So, like, for me, like, there's just some things that VAR needs to do to improve a little bit.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. We'll kickstart into our next segment here. I want to talk about transfers. In a very, very interesting year due to, you know, COVID, of course, right?
Yep, and
the season being altered. There was also a longer transfer window this year. So we saw players go right until the end. Some big signings. We're going to note all of them. We're going to kickstart here with Wolves. I want to talk about Wolves for a bit here. Wolves is a team like Chelsea. You know, they got that Portugal connection going on. They got a Portuguese coach. Mm-hmm. You know, there's all these memes online circulating about Wolves. Oh, why didn't they sign a Portuguese player? Oh, they're going to sign a Portuguese player.
They have the Portuguese national team on there, except for all they need is Ronaldo.
Yeah, it's just Wolves is a team I like, and they've done some very interesting things in this transfer window, spending big bucks. You know, we recently saw Nelson Semedo, the Portuguese international, another Portuguese, going to Wolves, $33 million. Keanu whoever was involved in that Jota deal, Jota going the other way for 44, and whoever going to Wolves, young promising center back, also plays fullback. I thought that was an amazing signing for them, just because they have Adama, they have Neto, they have Podence. So they don't, I don't think that it'll be that bad that Jota left, because they have guys that will continue to, you know, be dangerous up front, along with Raul Jimenez, another Benfica product. Shout out Raul. And then recently, just before the deadline here, they brought in Nuri. Nuri, a left back from the French league. He comes in and, you know, he's going to slot into the left back position there. Most likely going to fight for that spot with Marçal, Brazilian product there. And yeah, they let go of Vinagre. I was surprised at that. A young Portuguese fullback, but they bring in Nuri on loan. Maybe he'll be better than him. They say his roof is really high. His ceiling's really high. So maybe they'll prove to be good for them. And then lastly, before I throw it over to you, Daniel, I just want to talk about the Fabio Silva deal. To me, in my opinion, that is going to be the worst transfer deal in a long time. I know he's a Portuguese player. I know he comes from rivals of Benfica, Porto. It's not all beef there. It just, my beef is that you sign a guy for 50 million.
Yep, which is 18, a lot of money.
He's 18 years old. He's a striker, right? They say he's very promising. Okay, he's very promising. But how do you sign a striker for 50 mil? He's 18, like I said before, and he only has one goal professionally for the first team of Porto. Mm-hmm. First team for Porto, he only has one goal. And in his appearances, I believe he had 12 or 13 appearances, which was how much he played last year, how many appearances he made in the first league of Portugal. He came on several times as a sub. I think maybe one or two times he may have started the game. Mm-hmm. I'm not an avid watcher of Porto, their rivals, so I only watch them when they play Benfica, and I hope that Benfica always beats them. But for me, that's another thing. I just look and I'm just like, how do you sign a player of this caliber for 50 mil? You think 50 mil would be getting you way more. You signed Semedo for 33. Mm-hmm. So it's just baffling to me. I don't know.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I think it's, although Fabio Silva is a good player, he's not worth his price tag.
He's
yet.
Unproven. He's unproven.
He is. Exactly. He's completely unproven. Even like some people might say that he's unproven because he's not playing in a top five league. Sure, somewhat I agree with that, but he's just unproven like at a professional level, like entirely. Like he exactly. played for Porto, who is obviously a world renowned team. They're a fantastic team. No shot there against Benfica at all. But he like you said, he has one goal. Like, how can you be signing somebody for 50 million as a number nine who's supposed to be your goal scorer when he has one goal in his professional career? Like, to me, it doesn't make sense on Wolves' part.
So we'll go from Wolves, an exciting team, to Manchester United, your team. Talk about their transfers and what they've done this window. You know, just the other day when the transfer deadline was about to close, they bring in Cavani. Mm-hmm. They bring in Ahmed Diallo from Atalanta. Tell me also they brought in, and tell me what you think overall from the perspective of a Manchester United fan.
So I think those were two good signings. I know Cavani's kind of nearing the end of his career. He's getting a little bit up there in age. He's still, I think, a world-class number nine.
250 I don't know how pounds much a week. Gonna... 250 yeah. pounds a week is a lot of money.
Yeah, it is a lot of money, though, to be spending on somebody that late in their career. But I think Manchester United, like for them, it's not – money's not really an issue because obviously they're one of the most expensive teams in the world, and I don't really think that they care about money. So for me, it's a pretty decent signing now with – now it looks even better because Martial obviously getting the straight red card, which we already discussed. He's going to be suspended. And I think it's a decent signing now that you look at it that Martial's out. My next signing would probably be Telles from Porto. Sorry yep. about that again. he's a class fullback. He can play almost anywhere on the field. He's a good passer, dribbler, defender. He's a pretty big guy, so he's obviously very physical, and his pace is pretty good. He's just a very good overall player, and I think for the price tag that they got him for, which was 22 mil, everything's gonna be in US dollars. Let me just put that out there. 22 mil USD. It's a fantastic price tag on a very good player. For me, Manchester United was lacking at the fullback position. You have Wan-Bissaka, who has, for me, he had a breakout season last year. He played very well defensively, and people would consider him like maybe a starter for the English team. Obviously, England has a lot of fullbacks that are just fantastic, so many people consider him a starter for England. I think he was fantastic last year, so that addresses their right back. But their left back, they have Luke Shaw, who hasn't been great.
Injury prone as well.
Yeah, he's been very injury prone. He's been out a lot of games with a bunch of injuries. They expect him to be a great signing, which I think he was a decent signing when you look at him overall for United. But I don't think it was fantastic like they thought it would be. So I think bringing Telles in, and he'll probably get the starting position.
Like, I'm excited.
Most instantly.
I'm excited to see Telles like start for Manchester United because mm-hmm. at Porto, he's known for taking penalty shots. He was notorious for penalty shots, and he was notorious for taking free kicks. And I'm just going to love seeing Bruno Fernandes and him fighting over every chance they can get to take penalties or to take free kicks. So I'm just – and that's what I'm looking
forward
to. You're
excited for that.
That's what I'm excited for.
I think United's best signing has to be for me Van de Beek from the Dutch side Ajax for mm-hmm. 46 mil. I think he's class. He was a target for many top teams last year. He was a target, I believe. I know for Real Madrid for sure, and I believe PSG and Barcelona also kept their eye on him. So for United to get him, and I think they got a pretty good bargain on him too as well, for 46 mil. I think the amount of money that they paid for him doesn't do him a great justice, because people are going to think, oh, 46 mil, you're looking at a player like we just discussed, Fabio Silva, who is really young, going for 50 mil, and he hasn't proved anything. And Van de Beek is a very proven player. I think this is a fantastic transfer for Manchester United. It's probably one of the better midfielders that are coming into the Prem from this transfer.
All right, let's kick it over to Chelsea, my boys, the Blues. They had a very proactive transfer window, one of the most or the most in the Premier League this year. I'm just going to list up some guys off the top here and their prices. So I got the goalkeeper, Edouard Mendy from Senegal, pardon me, 28 mil US. Malang Sarr, they got him from Nice as a free agent. They loaned him out to Porto. Kai Havertz, amazing, amazing signing. 88 mil, a lot of money for him, but I know he will be worth it. They brought in Thiago Silva, the 35-year-old from formerly of PSG, free transfer. Ben Chilwell, left back, 55 mil from Leicester. We mentioned Leicester before. Great product out of Leicester. Ben Chilwell, also an international player for England. Then they brought in, I was so happy when they announced this, Timo Werner from RB Leipzig, amazing striker, very good in front of goal, and he is very pacey. I think he'll fit this Chelsea style really well. He was bought for 58 mil. And then last but not least, Hakim Ziyech. He's a winger by trade. He also could play down the middle of the park. Very exciting left foot. He's got an amazing, amazing left foot, very skillful, formerly of Ajax as well. He was brought in for 44 mil, and he hasn't been able to play yet. So I'm not judging Chelsea quite yet on their start. Edouard Mendy as well came in recently. But yeah, Ziyech is going to be great for them. And I know that these transfers are really going to boost Chelsea's first team because they addressed a lot of key areas where they were lacking last year, especially with that transfer ban in place. They were restricted in a lot of sense.
And they still finished where they still finished fourth place with the transfer ban.
I thought Frank Lampard was absolutely phenomenal last year with what he was able to have. He wasn't able to bring in anyone. Just Christian Pulisic was there, already signed beforehand. They let him go through. He played for them. He was the only new signing. And what he did there was absolutely amazing. And I think bringing in these players is just going to open up a lot of doors for them. And I'm definitely considering them for a contender, maybe not just this year, but maybe next year they'll be all the more ready.
Yeah, I definitely think that they had probably the best transfer list in or the best transfer, like everything. They signed a bunch of world-class players. Like that's what it comes down to. You got Werner, Ziyech, Thiago Silva, Chilwa, Malang Sarr. Like you said, there's plenty of players that they signed, and they're all fantastic players. I think Silva is nearing the end of his career, but he's still a world-class center back for me. Ziyech, Werner, Chilwa, a little bit younger, fantastic players. I know you said Ziyech. We'll see how he pans out because we haven't seen him start. Chilwell got his first start last week and he performed exceptionally well. I think that they have a lot of talent with their youngsters that Frank Lampard utilized last year and now bringing in a couple of experienced players. They should be very fun to watch. I'm going to jump to the next team that we're going to talk about. It's just a really quick signing. Sheffield got Brewster from Liverpool for 23 mil.
23 mil. Interesting signing for sure. You know, he wasn't given his chance at Liverpool. You know, obviously, they have a stacked offense, a stacked attack. And, you know, it's only fair for him to go out on, you know, his first venture away from Liverpool after being, you know, a Liverpool product. And, yeah, overall, a great signing for Sheffield. They needed another attacker because they're struggling right now for scoring goals. And that brings us to Liverpool. So, Liverpool, they brought Jota from Wolves, as I previously mentioned, 47 mil. Thiago Alcantara, we mentioned him earlier in the episode, and how crucial he is to that midfield, how amazing he'll be for them as well, a passing playmaker. And then they also brought in the like of Tsimikas from Greece, the Olympiacos product, and he was bought for 14 mil. And then I'll throw it over to you with Arsenal, because Arsenal had a great transfer in those.
Arsenal did have a good transfer list. They signed. Okay, we're just going to run through some players quickly, and then we'll discuss a little bit. We got Saliba for 35 mil, who's fantastic. He's very young, and it should be a good transfer for Arsenal in the long run. Gabriel, 35 mil, another good center back who played in the Ligue 1, and he was a very world-class center back. And now, the day of the transfer deadline, they signed Partey for 66 mil, and for me, that's one of the best signings of the transfer market.
He's a tank. He's a tank. Amazing.
He's a phenomenal. He can do everything you need in a midfielder. He has passing, dribbling, a little bit of shooting. He has a good amount of pace. He has physical defending. Like you can use him all over the midfield, and I think he's going to be a fantastic, probably the best signing for Arsenal.
Arteta is doing something truly special in North London. The players he's brought in have been, phenomenal. They're not usually that active in the transfer window. I feel sad for all my Gunners friends. But yeah, Partey, now they should be very happy with the midfield with a pairing of Xhaka, Partey, and Ceballos. So it's just exciting times at Arsenal. And we'll continue with North London here. Tottenham Hotspur, 6-1 out last time against Manchester United.
Don't remind me.
They bring in some good, great signings. They really want to address the defense. Mourinho takes pride in his defense and really likes, that everyone always says the trademark, park the bus, Mourinho style. So, mm-hmm. he brings in fullbacks, but they're fullbacks not known for their defensive capabilities, but rather for their attacking capabilities. Mm-hmm. He brings in Reguilon from Real Madrid, and he brings in Doherty from Wolves. I think these signings were class signings. They give them depth at the defensive side of the field, but also their fullbacks, they're going to thrive under Mourinho because they're so technical and they're so good at going forward. And these guys are going to cause a lot of problems going down the flanks. And you pair him, you pair Reguilon with Son on his side, and then Bale, new signing, with Doherty. They're just going to be very dangerous going forward. So exciting times at Tottenham. They also bring in Vinicius from Benfica on loan. I was baffled as a Benfica fan. Great signing for Tottenham, in my opinion. He'll be a backup to, Harry Kane. Harry Kane's obviously got that spot, but, Vinicius will give him some competition. He plays similarly to that of Harry Kane, and he's got a knack for scoring goals. Very good. He has the Liga Noj, the Portuguese league first tier, scoring title last year. He scored 20 goals for Benfica, and he goes out on a one-year loan with the option to buy for 45 million. So definitely some great signings from Tottenham, and I'll throw it off to you with Manchester City.
Yeah, so we got Manchester City here. We got they signed this transfer. They signed Ferran Torres for 26 mil from
Valencia.
That's who he came from. 26 mil. He fits. I think that he fits their play style. He's kind of like a Mahrez, very quick feet, yep. Fantastic at passing and dribbling. So he definitely fits their play style. They signed Nathan Ake from Bournemouth. I can't say their name, so sorry for butchering that. Another fantastic fullback, center back, which they definitely needed to address. Then they signed Diaz from Benfica.
Yep, my boy.
So you got some Portuguese now on Manchester City.
Some more Portuguese, yeah.
More Portuguese. And then they gave away Otamendi in that Diaz deal. So I think Otamendi was a pretty good center back for City. I mean, he won the title with them there, so he obviously played a pretty pivotal role in that. But I think it was just his time to go.
I was just about to say his time. You're so true. Mm-hmm. It's so true. Sorry to cut you off, but Ruben Dias just brought in, and he's 23 years old. For people who don't know Ruben Dias or haven't seen him play, they're definitely missing out, and they will definitely get to see him now in the England's first year, mm-hmm. because he will start day in and day out for Manchester City. He's a solid center back. He's very aggressive, which fits that Premier League style. I think Guardiola is really going to like him, but he's very technical as well. He's able to switch the play, and he's able to move the ball around, and that's what Guardiola looks for in his system. And for 67 mil, it's not too bad because Manchester United bought Harry Maguire for 80. So that's all I got to say.
Look where that turned out.
And interesting stat here. Since Pep's arrival, he spent 400 million on defense. So, big investments here. And, for Manchester City moving forward, they want to win the league, of course. But, Guardiola's hungry and his players are hungry for the Champions League title. And they'll definitely be fighting for that a lot this year.
Yeah. And I think that 400 mil on defense, although at the beginning of this year, they've given up a good amount of goals. They got absolutely killed by Leicester City, and that was like a 5-2 thrashing.
Now, that was an embarrassment from Manchester City, in my
opinion. Yeah, and for you to go and look at Pep, and he spent 400 mil on his entire back line, like it's just not a good look for him at the beginning of the year, because you're expecting at the beginning of the year your players come up flying, and City's always had a reputation for they don't lose very many games, and to get thrashed like they did against Leicester, like it just wasn't a good look for them. I don't know. I didn't like that Pep spent 67 mil on Diaz, but like you say, he is a very class center back. So hopefully that helps them in their for their defensive core. I'm going to jump into Everton. I know I already mentioned most of the names. We got Doucouré, James Rodriguez, and Alan. Alan came from Napoli. He was a fantastic midfielder there.
Great box-to-box midfielder.
Yeah, he's a great box-to-box midfielder, and he's fantastic defensively. He's very well-rounded. James, we already discussed, and Doucouré, who's another defensive midfielder that they brought in from relegated Watford. Watford was relegated, and I knew a lot of their better players wanted to leave the club, because when you're top of a team in the Prem and then you get relegated, it's kind of like would you want to stay at that team? I know a lot of players are very faithful to their team because like that's all they know, but someone like Doucouré, who has so much talent, it's kind of a waste for me in the English second league. So I think it was a good transfer for him to Everton. And then not to miss Ben Godfrey from Norwich.
Great signing.
He's a great signing. He's a fantastic young center back. And it's going to be good to see him in the Prem again. So it's going to be great.
Yeah, 27 mil for Ben Godfrey. He plays for the U21 Nationals for England. 27 mil for him is a decent price tag.
I think it's a steal, to be honest. He's nice and young. He's a good center back, and I think it's a good signing for Everton.
He's got some size to him for sure. Some other notable players leaving the Prem. You saw Felipe Anderson go to Porto. We mentioned teams fighting relegation earlier in the show, but I just want to. Do you think West Ham has what it takes to stay up? Do you think they did enough this transfer window in order to stay up, or do you think they're going to go down?
I didn't like the Felipe Anderson deal. I know it does make Porto a stronger team, and it was a loan deal, but it has the option to buy, and the option to buy is like I think sending out a player on loan is beneficial to your team, because like you're basically telling him that he's still needed for the team. It's just he's not needed currently, or he is needed. It's just that they don't feel he has a great enough impact or could become a better player, and they don't have the facilities for him to become a better player. So I don't know. I thought he's always been a great player out on that left wing, and they have obviously Antonio in the middle, and they signed Haller last year, who has been a decent signing for them. But I think I didn't really like that deal on theirs to leave a buyout at the end of it, at the end of the loan spell.
Yeah, West Ham, for me, they didn't do enough this year in terms of the transfer market. They're a team based out of London. You think that they would want to spend more money? They have the money to bring in some guys, and all they did was they signed Thomas Suchek, the center defending mid, on a permanent basis, and that was for $5 million. So you know they weren't big buyers this year in the in the market, and maybe you know, like you're going back to what we said earlier, maybe they might end up being one of those teams fighting to stay afloat. So who knows? We don't know, you know, with players being out due to coronavirus concerns, how teams are going to shape up. We already had to see Thiago Alcantara and Mane not being able to play. So that's definitely something that's going to be on the topic of discussion throughout the course of the season and throughout many episodes here on Premier Talk. Just throwing it off to next week and what we have in store for you guys. We will talk about the international break and Premier League players playing abroad during the international break. Right now, the international break has begun and they are out and about getting in those qualification matches. So they're out there with their respective national teams, a lot of players. And we also want to do a little throwback. We love the retro aspect. We love looking back years down the road in the Premier League and talking. And we're going to talk about some of the highlights, some of the best moments. So
it's
going
to be
a
very fun segment. It's going to be fantastic to look back and see what some of the best moments were from the Premier League. And I know as soon as you say that, there's a bunch that come to mind, but we're going to leave that for next episode.
Yes, that is all today for Premier Talk. Thanks for being here with us, guys. I'm your host, Andrew Mello, and co-hosting with me, as always, is Daniel Barbudo. We'll see you guys next time.
See you guys next time.